Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
Your outpost for the week is freshly delivered, and I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing, and with me, as she is every single week, well, this week, she... Why are you wearing floaties?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm recording. I want to be in the pool. I want to be in my pool. Yeah, I do. It's like right now, it's been a hole in the ground since... Oh, I don't know, like late February, early March. Just a giant hole in my backyard. And now it's a pool. It's a pool.
So exciting.
So, yeah, maybe next week you'll actually hear the like, whoosh, and I'll just be.
You're jumping in.
I'm like trying to like tread water while we're like, yeah, yeah.
You need to. They've got to have somewhere like Harry Potter floaties somewhere.
Oh, I'm sure they do.
Because that'd be awesome.
Yeah, for sure. Mm. It's just in time, too, because it's supposed to be crazy hot here in Arizona this week.
Oh, well, so. Good for you guys. It's been chilly where we live. It's just been kind of like chilly, and there's been a lot more rain than normal at this time of the year. So I'm just ready for some sun. So absolutely. Just come anytime.
At least we're not the East Coast who are anticipating large... plagues of locusts, or I'm sorry, cicadas.
Cicadas
apparently.
Are awful.
So
growing up in Texas.
So sorry about that.
Not great.
Sorry about that. Was it like Pennsylvania, Virginia, that area? Sorry.
Well,
I'll be in the pool. You can tell me all about your cicadas.
We got good news because we got an email from a listener called Andrew. His name is Andrew, and he said a fairly new listener, instant fan. I've been thoroughly enjoying your breakdown of the books and have been inspired to reread the series after 10 plus years. About halfway through The Deathly Hallows, two questions. Will you be reviewing The Cursed Child, and have you been following along with the news of the unconfirmed but hopefully soon to be revealed Harry Potter RPG video game? I haven't really heard anything about the video game. I do know there's a game on for like your... iDevice or your mobile phone called the Hogwarts Mystery game, which I've kind of been playing a little bit, and it's kind of fun. You get to play a character at Hogwarts, which is kind of cool. And then
less RPG and more like story.
Yeah, it is like, kind of a story game.
Choose your own adventure, do some story stuff. Yeah.
And will we be reviewing The Cursed Child? You know, we honestly haven't made up our minds about that yet.
we haven't really talked about it yet.
Part of it is this series altogether makes kind of a clean 200 episodes. And so there's a part of me that doesn't want to ruin that. There's just something about that. But who knows? We could get to the end and be like, oh, we should talk about The Cursed Child. And I'm sure we'd probably break it down differently, too, because there's part one and part two, and it wouldn't really work to cover, I don't think, and I don't know. We'd have to figure out how we were going to cover it, because it wouldn't really work the way we do this show. So.
Yeah. Same with Fantastic Beasts, right? Like, we could review the screenplays of those in written form, because the book is just a series of... fantastical beasts, right?
Exactly.
So the book's not really useful.
No, not for review. No,
but not for a animal by animal or beast by beast review. But I'm sure there's someone out there who's done that. But yeah, we haven't really talked about what comes next. I think we're just excited to get into this book, and then we'll start looking past it.
Yeah. No, so we're not sure, but thank you for listening, Andrew. We're really excited that you're enjoying the show and appreciate it. Of course, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed so that way you get the show as soon as it drops. And if you're on Apple Podcasts, you know, do hit us up with a star rating review so it helps other people find the show. You can find us on Twitter at @JoinNerdParty. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. We're on Instagram at The Nerd Party, and we've got thenerdparty.com where you can see all of the shows that we've got here on the network, as well as the contact section, which is where Andrew went to send us the email. So you can send us an email as well, and we'll usually, you know, we'll read those out on the show, especially if you got questions or some thoughts, or maybe you're just like, hey, we love the show. So.
And I also had someone on Instagram reach
out. Yay!
It's Valo. Yeah, Valo _ SM. And she says she was starting to listen. She started listening to Outpost at the beginning of quarantine. And then she found it really cute talking about listening to me become pregnant and then have Olive and then see a picture of her on Instagram at 2.5. And so, you know, she's saying, sorry, she's late to the game. But I also really appreciate that. It was totally an unintended consequence of this project and this adventure together. It's to sort of document all of that. So thank you all for listening to that. And, you know, I also think it's really sweet to look back on all that. And I was touched that she took the time to say something. Oh, and tell me my daughter's cute. Cause you know, I think that, but
yeah,
I'm
yeah.
biased.
Well, it's funny because that we did document your first pregnancy, you know, so like,
my only pregnancy. Well,
there you go. There you go. So it's documented though on like forever on podcast
for all
exactly.
eternity.
So you can always go back and listen to it if you ever want to remember what it was like.
If I ever think, oh, maybe I should have another baby, I can just listen to the last 2 years of the podcast and be like, no, I'm good.
Well, excited to dive into chapter 2 today. This one's called In Memoriam, and it's a shorter chapter, but we learn a lot of things. And, you know, just as a heads up, it's an important chapter to pay attention to because there are a lot of things that are going to play into where this book ends up at the end. Like, it's going to play into the major storylines that we're going to be going through. And I really thought that it was interesting because, you know, we finally, you know, we got through the really dark chapter. And this is an interesting chapter of Harry preparing himself for what he's going to be doing this year because it's completely different than going off to school. And so he's, for the first time in 6 years, he's cleaning out his school trunk, something he hasn't done in a long time. Like, I love how she describes that he'd only really gone through like 3/4 of the layers, and there's this one-fourth layer of crap at the bottom that he's just never touched. And, you know, so
that he skims off the top quarter. Yes. And yeah, no, I like that description. It was nice.
Yeah, it's really fun. And part of this is we get the opportunity to kind of relive some of the series as he's pulling things out of, you know, his trunk. But it's interesting because we really just start with Harry having accidentally stepped on a cold cup of tea and having cut himself, and he curses, which is very funny. I love how she implies that they curse by just saying Harry cursed, you know, instead of actually telling you what the word was. But you can figure it out. Insert any curse word here you want. So
insert your favorite.
Exactly.
Children.
And it kind of implies too, you know, that the kids are getting older. And so it's just really interesting though to see Harry in this place where he's looking through all of his things, and he's trying to figure out what's going to be the most important to him. And basically, Harry takes everything that was in the trunk, and he reduces that to, as in British terms, a rucksack or a backpack. Like, he puts everything into that.
And then a pile that he just assumes he'll never see again.
Yeah.
But what's really interesting is as we read this chapter, you mentioned you should read it carefully, but literally we kind of circle back to almost everything she points out in this chapter comes back, whether it's in the next chapter or the chapter after, or it's 2 or 3 chapters down, or it's the end of the book. Like, almost every single thing in this chapter carries some sort of meaning to it. Everywhere from the teacup, as you mentioned, that he crushes, to the mirror shard, to, you know, the other things in the bag, to it needing a knapsack, to Hedwig and her being kind of annoyed with Harry. Like, all of this plays a piece and a part in what's going to happen in the coming days. So I think it's in the coming book, actually. But I think it's so interesting. And a big part of this chapter is honestly just us reading newspaper articles from Harry's perspective. There's 2 different ones that we read in this chapter.
Yeah. It is fascinating because, he's cleaning up some papers and he's looking for a specific one. And he notices that there's this one paper that that mentions that Charity Burbidge, the Muggle studies teacher at Hogwarts, had resigned, Although we know that's not
retired,
the
I think is how they phrased it. Did they say retired? Yeah, I think they said she retired.
Yeah, just a small mention of her resignation, it says. So, yeah.
Okay.
Which,
yeah.
That's We Shall Her Die from the last chapter. So, gotta love, gotta.
You know, just throw that out there, guys. We saw her die, MBD.
We did. So, great job there. We really appreciate the lies there. The Daily Prophet is continuing to just, you know, spill. Very nice. Very nice.
Well, and that just shows again, you know, we kind of mentioned it in the last chapter about the ministry being overthrown and how the Order of the Phoenix doesn't really trust the ministry anymore. And here's kind of further proof of that, that you can't trust the prophet either. Like, they completely spawn Charity Burbage, and while maybe they haven't caught wind that she's actually dead yet, like, she's disappeared. She's not just resigned from Hogwarts.
Yeah. And this is something to which makes it really interesting, because we have Aphelios Dodge, who has written basically a eulogy for Dumbledore. And it's called,
I like to think of it as a love letter.
It could be. You get that feeling like he's somebody who truly loved Dumbledore. You know, whether it's more than that or not. I mean, he truly, this is a character to which, you know, he was very close at school. And I think there's a real beauty to that. And it's really interesting to see him describe Dumbledore as a character, because he goes into talking about Dumbledore in a way that we have not really heard before, and kind of giving us a backstory on Dumbledore's early life, which, you know, with the fact that, you know, we hear about his father having attacked these three young muggles as he was just entering school. You know, the reason they become friends is because they both kind of feel like outsiders. And by the end of Albus's first year, he's so brilliant that nobody's thinking about what his father did. They're just thinking about how brilliant this kid is, which I find fascinating because, you know, we always knew that Dumbledore was smart, but this section here really drives home just how incredibly smart Dumbledore was from the beginning, and the way in which he is very much setting himself apart even in his very first year at Hogwarts. And not because he has some famous name, but because of just how intelligent he is.
You know, we talked a lot in the past books about sort of the parallels of you know, Voldemort, or as he was at the time, Tom Riddle, to Harry, right? But there's also some really interesting parallels here to Dumbledore, right? This sort of innate talent and very easy to slip into a very charismatic and manipulative situation as well. You know, he kind of achieves this fame and glory that Voldemort is constantly seeking. And so, you know, there's a part of that that makes it very relatable from a Dumbledore to Voldemort sort of perspective, right? And I find it so interesting because in this section, we also learn so much about his actual accomplishments, because we've heard sort of murmurs of them and lingering, and we've been meant to sort of regard Dumbledore as this high, all-powerful wizard for many, many books, many, many years now. And here we sort of get a breakdown of exactly why everyone holds him in this super high regard. And then we also kind of get some questions painted in this first section, right? There's talk of him becoming the Minister of Magic, and there's a very clear he never wanted that. Things like that here. And I think it's so interesting. It leaves questions, but it provides a lot of insight. I do feel like it's a love letter from the sense of, like, it's someone who has a great deal of admiration from him, wanting you to appreciate and understand why he held Dumbledore in such a high regard. So, you know, it's super interesting. And then I feel like from there we transition to almost the complete opposite, right? We get like two completely dichotomous. It's very, we get a very dichotic, like, approach to Dumbledore here. You get this love letter, and then you get this sort of scathing assessment of him, which is almost unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, and it's fascinating because so you know, he fills in so much of Dumbledore's life. The fact that he's great in school, the fact that when they were going to leave school, That they were going to go on this trip together, and he couldn't because his mother had died, and so he needed to take care of his sister. He fills in the relationship between Aberforth and Dumbledore, and about the way in which, you know, it hasn't always been easy for them, especially since, you know, obviously Aberforth is kind of living in his brother's shadow the moment he steps into school, much in the same way. And what I thought was so interesting is what we're seeing here is there are some connections with characters we are familiar with. Like, there's a connection between Dumbledore and Harry. You know, you come in kind of infamous for something that you don't even want to be famous for. And then you have to prove yourself. And then you have, like, Aberforth, who's sort of like Ron in some ways, right? Like, he is somebody who is having to live up to older brothers and is always kind of in their shadow and trying to find his way out of that in some ways. So it's fascinating to see these characters, which, you know, we only know as adults, kind of see what their early childhood was, and that they give us a picture of, and we can kind of fill in the picture because they reflect now other characters that we already know and we have watched grow up.
We also have a dash of kind of all three of them, because you have Hermione in there with this kind of utmost brilliance that she brings and this sort of book smart ineptitude. I mean, he literally writes the uses of, what is it, like 10 different uses for dragon's blood?
Or 12 different versions.
12.
Yes.
Right? Like, it's, you know, you think about that, and you think about he sort of embodied a small element of everyone within this Trinity, right? And that, I think that's going to come into play a little bit too in the future when we learn a little bit more about what Dumbledore has done in his death, or at the time of his death, I guess. But yeah, he sort of can relate to each of those characters in a way that is very unique, right? And not something that anybody in the world could do, you know? Most people can relate to one or two, and he sort of can tie into all three of them and understand and appreciate their strengths because he's had some of that himself.
Well, and what's fascinating too is that
he's like a peacock.
But like learning...
He's got a little bit of everything.
Learning about Dumbledore here, we see that there's a lot of tragedy in his early life by what happens with his father, his mother dying, his needing to take care of his sister, then her death.
Falling out with his brother.
Yeah, which causes a fallout with his brother. And then, you know, him being completely famous for his incredible duel with Grindelwald in 1945, which, you know, I love the way that he describes it as being, you know, anybody who witnessed this, just, it was terror and awe as you watch these two extraordinary wizards battle. And you kind of like, what's great now is that we've had the first two Fantastic Beasts movies, and you put those battles in your mind and you're like, wow, if this is kind of like the quintessential battle, like, I can't even imagine what that's going to look like once we finally get there in those films to watch those two go at it. But what we really see is that, and I think what I like about the way that Dodge is discussing Dumbledore is he is talking about him in almost like rose-colored glasses sense, but at the same time, I think he's also talking about him and saying, look, all of these things that he went through, all of these burdens and frustrations and harsh times, you know, and sad times, they all made him the man that he is today. What's interesting is that I think that really helps set the stage for what we get with what's coming up. But before that, I think this is fascinating because, again, something that Harry thought about in the previous book during the funeral comes back, where he's like, I thought I knew Dumbledore and I knew nothing.
I didn't ask him a single personal question. And he thinks back to the one time he did and realizes it was kind of the one time he was very, it was very apparent that he didn't think Dumbledore was being honest with him, which is saying something considering we know how many times Dumbledore was maybe not perfectly forthcoming with him. But it has to do with when he looked in the mirror of Aristotle and he asked what he saw. And he said, well, a nice warm pair of wool socks. You know, and it's just one of those things where I don't know if we ever learn, even at the end, what he actually saw in the mirror, but it's sort of alluded to in further discussions mm-hmm. in the book as to what he actually would have seen. But it is really interesting to see all this play out. And I do think that while a love letter, it also doesn't try to paint Dumbledore as this like perfect person, right? Talks about the things he endured, but you know, it definitely doesn't take to point out any shortcomings or flaws or growing pains that we all go through as humans. It doesn't necessarily make him perfect, but it also doesn't go out of its way to point any of that out. However, the next article does a great job of pointing out all the ways that he was human. In fact,
well,
probably
yeah.
more so
insinuating
than
all of the ways in which he was,
you know, and I think that's what
in a yes. very accusatory mm-hmm. manner.
What I think, because
it's our yep. favorite. It's our favorite person yeah, in the whole wide world.
Say favorite.
She's up there with Umbridge. Yeah. Rita Skeeter.
Well,
sorry, go on.
And here is again where J.K. Rowling really, I think, it starts to get back into her idea of like, you know, media and its responsibility. Mm-hmm. And what we saw, I think, beforehand was the respectful adoration of a man who may not be perfect, but deserved our respect, right? Mm-hmm. And deserved to be eulogized in a way that leaves people to respect him. And here we see the complete opposite
to
of that.
To honor his memory.
Yep. yep. Which is, yep. Yep. You think you knew the real person, but let me tell you what you didn't know, which is to tear this person down and make them out to be awful. And so just the way in which she talks about how he wasn't as wonderful as everybody thought he was, about how, you know, he had dabbled in the dark arts himself when he was younger, and, you know, what he's even worse than Aberforth's, you know, kind of fondness for fiddling with goats, which I have no idea what that even means.
Really? Do you actually not know what it means?
Or I really don't want to know.
It's exactly what you think
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, I know. I just don't want to. I just want to okay. think about it.
Okay. You just don't want to think
no,
on it,
no.
but you know what it, you know, okay. Okay.
And then this whole implication that it's really his mother and his sister that are the most interesting, and the fact that, you know, he wasn't even the one who thought up all the dragon's blood stuff. He borrowed papers from somebody who had already figured out like seven of them. And so and then she gets really personal with Harry, talking about how she has an entire chapter on this, you know, unhealthy, toxic relationship that they had, and how, you know, like, she may be the only person who really knows Harry Potter. And it's just, it's journalism at its worst. And what's so sad is that we're so used to this, it doesn't even shock us anymore. But this is the kind of journalism we see every single day on every single network you can watch. Like, it's just awful. And regardless of whether or not what she's saying is true or not, it's the way that it's presented, which is just so derogatory and awful. You know, there's plenty of reason to be harsh on somebody in the media if they're a liar or a cheat or, you know, something like that. But the way she's presenting this is just so salacious and disgusting. I'm like Harry, I'm just as mad as he is, as he just kind of wads this up and throws it away. And he's pissed after reading this. He's just pissed. I'm pretty sure there were some other curse
yeah,
words that happened.
He probably also uttered some curse words with that. Yeah, it's interesting. It's definitely, we still see it. I mean, how many times are we skimming a social media site or even just a regular news site, and you get those sort of bait clicks that have some sensational title to them, and it's very salacious, and we have to know. And it's like everyone wants to believe the worst. And so it's just, it's hard. And we know as readers that this, and Harry and the characters in the book know that, like, nothing that woman has to say has any substance to it, right? There may be an inkling of truth somewhere deep in there, but for the most part, it's just borderline slander, right? And like you called out her comment about she's the only one who knows the real Harry Potter, things like that. Like, he knows that's not true, but it still makes us so angry to read that. And we hate her so much. And like, but it sells and it prints and people want to read it and people believe it. And that happens nowadays. It happens in reality. It's this strong power we have that is not being used responsibly. And it's, again, it's sort of her anthem throughout all these books, is how having free media has positives, but it also leads to false information left and right because people don't do their research and don't know what to believe when they're fed all kinds of these sensational stories and straight up lies. There's no ethics and integrity in this. So it's, and we know that part of it's because of her quick quill, right? Like it literally writes down a sensational version of whatever statement of truth was just said. So, you know, it's so interesting to see it right out of the gate and how much, and be reminded of how much I dislike that character so quickly into this book. But I think it also still continues to paint the picture that there is an ulterior motive going on at the ministry and the prophet right now. And that, you know, it reiterates what Harry said earlier in the last book about shutting down Scrimgeour and saying, no, I will not be your poster child for how the ministry is going, right? It just reaffirms the decision he already made. And there's no reason not to make a different, there's no reason to make a different one at this point because this is just ridiculous.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. And I think the thing is about this is that what it does is it sets up two different ways of thinking about Dumbledore and it gives us two different pictures of him. And I think it does kind of lead us with the question that, you know, because Harry even mentions, I don't know Dumbledore the way I thought I did. And so this plants, I think, some seeds of doubt in him as to what exactly to believe about this character, even though he's angry about it. That still doesn't mean he doesn't have some kind of doubts about it. And I think the thing that's so gross about what Rita Skeeter does is that even if some of the things that she may be saying are somewhat true, they lack the context to which would truly make those understandable. You know, and so, and that's what sensationalism does, is that it really removes most of the context to just give you the most sensationalistic parts of something, which is what happens, again, it happens in so many tweets or on any news station you're watching. It's like, we just give you this hot highlight, you know, of like what it is that we want you to click on or what you, we want you to take away from something when that's not really the case. It's like a third of the information, but a third of the information in your brain without the rest of the context is not good information at all. So
it's like a statistic, right? I can give you any statistic and make it sound good or bad, but until you actually understand what that means, you're not going to understand it. So if I say 1% of something, that seems really low. Unless I tell you it's 1% of 100 million, then you're like, oh, that's quite high actually, right? So it's the same thing. You don't really have a good understanding of what's happening until you have the full context of what's going on. And, you know, and I think because he knows there's usually a grain of truth in there somewhere with her that's just been sort of played out and taken out of context, it's really hard for him to decipher which of this could potentially be the truthful parts, right? And for somebody whose entire life mission is to sort of follow this, the guidance of somebody that you're recently realizing you don't know very well, just blindly to your death. I mean, that's asking a lot. And that would really lead you to question, am I making, like, was this the right person to put my faith in? Right? Especially because everything around you is telling you to probably doubt that. So it really is sort of a challenging situation for Harry, not just personally, like in not knowing his relationship with Dumbledore, but he's made a lot of major decisions based on this relationship that he now may feel like were the wrong decision. Mm-hmm. So,
well, it's heavy. It is. And I mean, the chapter kind of ends that way as well with this continuing, is that he's, you know, shuffling around papers and everything and throwing things away. He thinks he sees a bright blue eye, this flash of blue looking at him in the shard of the mirror that was Sirius's. And he looks at the wall and there's nothing on the wall that would shine in the mirror is blue. He has really no idea what he saw, but all he does know is that he will never see Albus Dumbledore's piercing blue eyes looking at him again, which makes him very sad. And that's the way we leave the chapter. So it just ends with this kind of like angry melancholy that I think will be interesting to kind of see as that plays out throughout the rest of the chapters. And where we go with this information for Harry, as we've talked about in this this episode is the whole idea of Harry having to then, is going to have to struggle, I think, throughout this book, is what is he going to choose to believe about Dumbledore, and how is that going to impact then the rest of what he does throughout the book? So it's going to be a fascinating journey.
Right. How is he going to let this influence his decision-making process and what he decides to do, knowing that he's essentially following Dumbledore's orders and all of his information was funneled from one person. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be great. And I can't wait to keep going because I really want to. So,
I know, I know.
So hard. But so next week, we're in chapter 3, but before we get there, Drea, where can everybody find you?
Sure, you can find me floating in my pool. No, I'm just kidding. You can find
me
on
Twitter.
I have
to go to Google
Twitter.
Maps and...
find Drea. No. You can find me on Twitter at PCFChick or on Instagram at Drea Kaufman, and it's C-O-F-F-M-A-N.
Hi, and you can find me on Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero. I'm under the name @Rushing02. I'm here on the network doing Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills. It's a Star Wars podcast, and so every week we're talking about something different in the Star Wars universe, which is a lot of fun. You can find me doing a couple of shows over on the Trek FM network. One is called The Orb. I'm doing that with Chris Jones, and when we get a chance, we talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I do our general geek show, as we're talking about all of the fandoms that we love. You can find us having talked through all the Harry Potter stuff over there, but you know, any fandom you can think of, we've probably talked about something or part of it at least. And then you can find me doing cinema stories with my good friend Courtney. We are hoping to be back soon, but you can find that wherever you get your podcasts as well. And we want to thank you so much for checking your outpost.
This just managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.